Chapter 13. Closing Speeches. Beverly Monk had some information. She'd managed to trace a friend of Claire's, Phoebe. When she called Phoebe, she found out that Phoebe had also received a call from someone pretending to be Jeff Kerr. She knew it wasn't, but had spoken to him anyway. She hadn't seen Claire Clement in 4 years. Beverly told Phoebe that she wanted to contact Claire again. Phoebe told her Claire's real name.
It was Brandt. Gabrielle Brandt. She was from Columbia, Missouri. She had a boyfriend who was crazy, and so she changed her name and left town. I think her father's dead. Her mother was a professor at the local university. Is she still there? I have no idea. I'll try to find her through her mom. Thanks, Phoebe.
Beverly took an hour trying to reach Swanson on the phone to sell him this information. After checking with Fitch, Swanson offered her $2,500. They bargained for 10 minutes and finally settled on $4,000 in cash. Swanson immediately flew to New York, arrived at dusk, and called Beverly's roommate, who told him that she might be at a party. He called the pizzeria where she worked and was told that she'd been dismissed. He drank coffee, made phone calls, and waited. Marlee wanted one more meeting with Fitch. Fitch could have kissed her feet when he saw her. He decided to tell her everything about Hoppy and Millie and the scam which had gone wrong. Nicholas must talk to Millie immediately, before she spoke to the other jurors. What would she do when she learned the truth? It would be a disaster, no question about it. Marlee listened without reacting as Fitch told the story. It amused her to see Fitch sweat.
I think we should get her off the jury, Fitch declared when he was finished.
Relax, Fitch. Nicholas and Millie are quite close. Millie will vote the way he wants.
Fitch tried to smile.
Just out of curiosity, how many votes do we have right now?
9. Look, Fitch, you're worrying too much. You've paid your money. You've got the best. Now relax and wait for your verdict. It's in very good hands.
Will we get all 12?
Nicholas is determined to get them all.
Out of the building, Fitch was almost dancing. Jose had never seen his boss so happy. Wendell Rohr and Durwood Cable were each practicing their closing speeches. In a conference room, in front of 7 lawyers, Wendell Rohr walked forward and back, speaking softly, with carefully chosen words to his jury. His voice was warm and rich, filled with sympathy 1 minute and hard words for the tobacco companies the next. He lectured and persuaded. He was funny and he was angry. He finished in 51 minutes. The closing speech had to be an hour or less. Judge Harkin's orders. The comments from his audience were tough. Rohr agreed to perform again. It had to be perfect. Victory was so close. Cable had a larger audience. He was videotaped so he could watch himself. He was determined to do it in 30 minutes. The jury would like that. Rohr would no doubt go on for longer. Cable delivered his closing speech, then watched the video, again and again throughout Sunday afternoon and into the night. By the time Fitch arrived at the beach house, he was his normal pessimistic self again. The 4 CEOs were waiting, having just finished a fine meal. Jankel was drunk. Fitch was questioned about the $2 million he'd required from each of them. He explained that the defense had a very large, unplanned expense.
Do you have the votes, Fitch? Asked one of the CEOs. I believe I do. The verdict has been purchased.
His voice held a touch of pride.
How?
I'll never tell, Fitch said coolly. The details are not important.
They stared at him. 8 times they'd been to the edge of disaster, and each time Rankin Fitch had saved them. Now he'd done it again.
How much? Jankel demanded.
10 million,
I've purchased the verdict for $10 million. That's all I'll say. Of course, nothing is guaranteed. You never know until the jury comes back. Well, it ought to be guaranteed at a price of $10 million, but the CEOs said nothing. There was a general feeling among the jurors that Sunday night would be their last in sequestration. The mood was more relaxed, and many of the jurors packed up their things. It was the third night of personal visits. Marley and Nicholas ate pizza in his room and discussed their plans. Marley left at 9. Nicholas went to see Hoppy and Millie. They were full of thanks. Millie was worried about staying on the jury. She'd discussed it with Hoppy and didn't feel she could be fair after what had happened. Nicholas had anticipated this and wanted Millie to stay on the jury. If she told Judge Harkin what had happened, then the judge would probably order the trial to be held again. "It's our job, Millie," Nicholas said. "We've been chosen to decide this case. It's our responsibility to reach a verdict." Millie agreed. Her new friend Nicholas made everything easier. After failing to meet with Cable, Derek had to deal with Cleve. They met in the Nugget Casino on Sunday night and drank a beer. Cleve gave Derek a packet containing $15,000. The other $10,000 would be paid after the verdict, as long as Angel voted for the plaintiff. After Cleve had left, Derek stayed behind to gamble. He bet heavily. The beers kept coming. Down to $7,000. He wanted to cry. But his luck changed, and he left the casino with nearly $11,000. Although it was too late for personal visits, he got in his car and started to drive to the Siesta Motel. Soon he noticed blue lights behind him. He stopped the car.
"Have you been drinking?" asked a policeman.
Derek was taken to jail. A 5-hour stay was automatic for drunk drivers. He couldn't phone Angel from jail, but he had to reach her before she left for court. At 5:30 on Monday morning, Marvis arrived at the police station to collect Derek. Derek gave his brother $200 and borrowed his car. He raced to the Siesta Motel and tried to wake Angel by throwing stones at her window.
"Don't move," said a voice behind him.
Derek turned to see Chuck, one of the deputies, with a gun.
"Hands up!"
Derek was taken to jail for the second time that night. Angel slept through it all. On Monday morning, while Nicholas helped Mrs. Grimes prepare Herman's breakfast, he dropped 4 small tablets into Herman's coffee. They wouldn't kill him. Herman would be sick for 4 hours, then recover completely. Nicholas carried their breakfast back to the Grimes' room. Mrs. Grimes thanked him. Such a nice young man. The drama started 30 minutes later. The door to the Grimes' room was open, and Herman was bent double on the bathroom floor. Lou Dell ran to the phone and rang the emergency services. Nicholas said to Ricky that maybe it was a heart attack. Herman had had one 6 years ago. The ambulance arrived, and Herman was taken away. In the confusion, Nicholas managed to knock over the coffee cup. Lou Dell called Judge Harkin. Pinex shares opened high on Monday morning. There was good news coming out of Biloxi, though no one knew the source. All tobacco shares rose in early heavy trading. Judge Harkin arrived in court at 9:30. He'd been arguing with Rohr and Cable. Cable wanted a new trial after the loss of another juror, but the judge didn't agree. Fitch sat in amazement. How do you give someone a heart attack? Was Marley capable of poisoning a blind man? Thank God she was on his side. Judge Harkin told the jurors that Herman wasn't in danger. Everyone was very relieved, and Shine Royce took Herman's place. The judge asked Wendell Rohr to start his closing speech. It went well, lasting 48 minutes, and he ended it with some figures.
You could value Jacob Wood's life at $1 million. Add some other damages, and the total sum that the family were due was $2 million. But there was also the role of punitive damages. How do you punish a company that has $800 million in cash? He was careful not to suggest a figure. In response, Durwood Cable took slightly more than half an hour to dismiss the idea that you should give millions to the family of a man who'd smoked for 35 years. It was just a means of getting money. He appealed to the jury's sense of fairness, asking them to judge the case on facts, not emotions. He had the jury's complete attention. The judge told the jury that the case was now for them to decide. He asked them to select a new foreman in place of Herman Grimes. As the jury left, Nicholas turned and looked at Fitch. Fitch nodded. Fitch left the court and went to his office. Marley phoned.
Fitch, I have new transfer instructions for the money.
She wanted it sent to a bank in Panama City.
You have 20 minutes, Fitch. The jury is eating lunch. If I don't have confirmation by 12:30, then the deal's off and Nicholas will change direction.
Within 10 minutes, the money was on its way. He received confirmation by fax. At 12:20, Marley called her banker in Panama, who confirmed receipt of $10 million. Marley was in a motel room 10 kilometers away with a fax machine. After 5 minutes, she instructed the same banker to transfer the money to a bank in the Cayman Islands. Nicholas called at 12:30 to learn that the money was safe. Marley went straight to the airport, where a small plane was waiting. Swanson had waited patiently for Beverly. She'd rung him at 3:30 a.m. Monday morning, obviously drunk, and arranged to meet him at 7 a.m. in the coffee shop. She was 4 hours late and looked drugged, but Swanson could have kissed her.
Have you got the money?
There was no doubt what the money would be spent on. Yes, but tell me about Claire.
Beverly gave him the information she'd got from Phoebe.
Now give me the money,
she said. Swanson handed her the envelope.
Thanks, he said, and disappeared.
He finally reached Fitch on the phone just after 1. By then, Swanson was on his way to Missouri.